Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Here's a good question to ask a professional investment advisor. Do you invest your own money the same way you invest your clients' money? Buy and sell the same things? If the answer is, well, not exactly, or not always, doesn't that make you wonder? KPP Financial Principals invest their own money right alongside their clients. To find out more about their investing programs, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com. That's the end of the commercial. And now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. It is August 10th, 2016. And of course, this hour we share every day is all about trying to make you better investors. Everyone wants their money to grow. Everyone does. So how do you grow it, protect it, and keep it fairly safe from all the volatility for the market? And we haven't had a lot of volatility recently, but it will pick up again. So that's what we're here for. It's really surprising how really careless people are when it comes to their hard-earned money. We as money managers have an extensive assortment of mutual funds and brokerage houses to choose from, and one of many factors is choosing these that are least costly. And that should be no different. What we do is no different what you should be doing. So when selecting an IRA brokerage account provider, for let's say, you should certainly consider cost. There is usually two types of cost in the IRA. Mutual funds expense ratios, how much they cost and hold on to, and trading costs of stocks and ETFs. Now, if you're a long-term passive investor, you probably invest mostly in mutual funds and just stay there. That's no problem. But that mutual fund charges a fee every year. So why not pick the cheapest ones if you're just going to sit and buy and hold? Same way with ETFs. You have a trading cost with ETFs, but if you're going to buy, you're going to stay in the index, find the cheapest one. And you know, and you could compare brokerage houses. You know, I think Scott Trades charges $7 per trade. TD Ameritrade, E-Trade, both charge about $10 per trade. And you know, right? That's a pretty big trade. If you're an active trader, that's going to add up. So once you figure out the platform or who you want to go with, a custodian, you know, sometimes it might be better to pay the $10 per trade versus the $7 because they give you better website, better information, better service, better research. You know, also if you're just starting out, there's what's the name of the company? Share Builder. You can start with a very low startup, about $250 to invest. Now be very careful. Don't buy 10 different entity, you know, positions with $250. It's just not enough and you'll get killed with your trading costs. But you know, it depends on what you need, how sophisticated you are. You know, so if you're very sophisticated, you might want to try something like Options Express, which by the way is a Charles Schwab company, and you know, for trading options. You know, it depends on how, depends on your level of knowledge. If you plan to do more or do your own trading and have any questions, you can always ask me. Well, I'll always give you my honest opinion. If that means not hiring us to manage your portfolio, that's okay. I don't have an issue with that. You know, that I do want to help wherever I can. So what's your money question? Check in on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHARGE, our anytime number. We'll try to answer your questions on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, this is Tim from Texas. I listen on podcasts. I have a question about taxes on stocks. I'm just starting trading stocks. And I think I understand the basic premise where if you hold the stock for more than a year, the gains are taxed at one rate. And if you hold it less than a year, it's taxed at a higher rate, the gains. But how are the dividends taxed? And also, am I thinking about dividends correctly when I'm thinking that if a stock pays a decent percent return dividend, that that's better than a savings account when if I just compare those two rates? But I also have to take into consideration the taxes on the dividends. So if you could explain that a little bit, I would appreciate it. Love the program. Thank you.
Okay, it's long-term versus short-term capital gains is 1 year or longer, long-term capital gains, and if you have long-term capital gains, it's taxed at 20%. Short-term capital gains is taxed at your ordinary income rate, whatever rate that is. Okay, and dividends. Dividends are paid quarterly or annually or whatever. You have to add that to your income. So it's your income tax rate on dividends. So, you know, I'm not an expert on the taxes. It's not something I pay a lot of attention to. I pay attention to growing the money. So, you know, when if you ask me about taxes, I will always say, well, talk to an accountant because they change the rules and I'm not, that's not something I specialize in. That's not my job. I only pay attention to taxes to try to avoid them once a year toward the end of the year, because then I look at the accounts and see if we have short-term or long-term capital gains and what can I do to mitigate those taxes. But as far as the tax rates and things, I'm not an expert on that. Let's also try and answer a question via our text message. MetLife tanked after earnings. What is your outlook on the stock? It's a pretty short text question. So MetLife is symbol is M-E-T, is Met. And let's pull it up. Let's pull both of them. I got a lot of software I always bring up. They are a global provider of life insurance, annuities, employee benefits, asset management services. They are a $44 billion company. Sales have been falling consistently for five quarters in a row. Earnings have been falling, and they look like they might turn up a little bit this year, 2% increase to $4.95, and then next year do better at $5.77. I love it when they estimate next year's earnings. And right now they're looking, estimating next year's earnings are pretty optimistic. Well, if the economy keeps growing, that's okay. Now, if you look at it, you'll say, well, it looks pretty good. It pays a 4% dividend. The stock has been in a downtrend for most of the year, you know, slowly going lower lows and lower highs up until the beginning of this year. Now, still higher lows one time. So it hit a low in February. Now it hit a higher low in July, just barely, though. But it hasn't made higher highs yet. So it's still pretty much on its technical basis. The chart is telling you there's nothing exciting about this. They can't seem to get above their 200-day moving average, and it's going to be tough. If you look at the fundamentals, you'll say, oh, it's 11 PE. Their $40 stock going to make $5.77 next year. That means the PE is going to be below 10. Great. Well, don't get too excited about that because the five-year range of PE is 5 to 12. So still at the near the top of the range. And it only has an 8% return on equity. It's not that strong. It's a big blue chip company paying a dividend that's probably fairly safe, but you need to buy it for the dividend. Don't buy it for growth. It is not going to work buying it for growth. And it was down, you know, 2.7% today, $1.13. So it had not a very good day. And so it's not something that I get excited about. I would not be a buyer of MetLife. I would not. Few individual investors succeed in the futures market, but don't be scared completely off because, you know, there can be room for this product to be an average person's portfolio, futures. And we're going to talk about that today. It's going to be our main talking point. Should you be looking to futures in your portfolio? Also, Dow 20,000. Do you think it's going to get there? Because I looked at the fundamentals ground up, bottom up analysts, all the analysts, that's what they think. Going to be Dow 20,000 within a year. I want to talk about that. Analysts. You know how I feel about analysts. They're wrong most of the time. Also, we didn't get to it today, but what does a billionaire look like? I'm hoping to get to that before the end of the day. Just what's a typical billionaire look like? You know, what kind of person is it? And those are going to be the talking points today. Of course, what's on your mind is more important than what's on my mind. So, you know, we're going to talk to you and any questions you have first. The market was down today. The Dow was down 37, the NASDAQ down 21, the S&P down 6. Now, those are not big numbers. but they haven't been up big either. It's been kind of like paint drying. I mean, it's very, very slow moving right now. It has been for last month. The market's not gone up very much, hasn't gone down, but very slow moving. And not that much volatility yet. Volatility, you know, calms down for periods at a time, but how long? Well, we had a pretty good volatility right at the end of June, beginning of July. I mean, there was a lot of volatility there. It was spikes down and up. So we just haven't seen it for a month or so. So don't get too comfortable with it. That's not going to happen, because it will. Our InvestTalk insiders can choose from a long list of our webinars, like The Upside of Lower Oil Prices, Steve and Justin, me and Justin. We did examine, this is some time ago, the world oil economics, OPEC versus U.S. oil producers versus the world, and how politics plays in an economic tug of war. So those are that's just one webinar. There's a number of them there. We always, many new webinars we put on there. I'm ready for your money questions. This is Invest Talk, and my direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve. My name is Gary. I'm a podcast listener from Massachusetts. Today's question for you is JPM, JP Morgan. Could you please let me know what your valuation is? Thank you very much. Take care.
Now, if you've listened to the show any length of time, you know I'm not big on the banks. I'm not big on them because I think with the Dodd-Graham Act and the implementation of all those rules and regulations and construction, still not done, and it's going to impact their earnings and their growth. So since it's unclear, I'm hesitant about buying them, and I haven't bought any. Having said that, J.P. Morgan is a global financial company providing private, commercial, and investment banking and treasury services in over 60 countries. It's a $238 billion company, big blue chip company, not going anywhere. They're going to make $5.63 a share this year. That's down 3% from last year. Next year, 2017, it's supposed to be a 10% increase to $6.21. Are you paying attention? Almost every stock people call about, the experts are saying next year earnings are going to be better. Next year earnings are going to be better. Do I believe them? Do you believe them? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? That's a long way away, 2017. Their dividend yield is 2.9%, which is not very big. They have a good, healthy cash flow of $7.81. Their five-year PE range is 6 to 12, and it's 12 right now. It's going to be 11 based on the current price and next year's earnings. So it'll be 11. So it's kind of buying at the top of the range, and I don't like to do that. Return equity is 10%. That's not high. I like to see it around 15, 18%, somewhere in there. So I'm not keen on buying this. I'm really not. Or any large bank at this point. Have they done well? Well, they actually have done pretty decently for the year. Having said that, let's see where it was at the beginning of the year. Let's update that, try to get that information. Yeah, well, they're up about $2 or $3 for the year. Okay, it's not very, you know, a year ago today, not for this year, but a year ago, 12 months, they're almost where they were. Okay, at the beginning of the year, well, they're up maybe 7% for the year. Not much to talk about. If you have a question, don't save it up. 888-99-CHART is our number, and you can get through 888-99-CHART, and you can get through any time you want to.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
888-99-CHART. You know, keeping an eye on risk is extremely important. And, of course, we have a tool that can help with that. It's almost like Goldilocks. It can show you your risk comfort level just right, just the right temperature of risk that you can dial into your portfolio. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com and you can find it right there. It's a quiz. It's really a quick quiz. It's a few questions. It's free, as I said, on investtalk.com, and click on the Invest Talk tab. Okay, let's talk about the talking point today, and it's about futures. Now, should futures be in your portfolio? What are futures? Okay, does everybody know what futures are? These are contracts that invest in one of five categories: stock indexes, bonds, and interest rates, currencies, or commodities. You're betting on the future price of something. So you're buying a contract based on that price. Now, you should not invest in futures on your own. It's a complex, it's difficult, and it takes years to become good at it. And even then, a lot of people are just not good at this. You know, for instance, you could buy, let's say you think coffee is going to go up next month, coffee beans. So you could buy a contract of coffee beans and then hope that it goes up and you can sell that contract at a higher price. Well, what affects the cost of coffee beans? Weather? Politics? Currency fluctuations? The crop? You know, it's complex. So you don't have to buy the futures contract yourself. You can buy a fund that does that. There's funds, futures funds, that can do that for you. And so those are the things you want to do if you're going to get involved. What's the benefit of future contract or futures managed futures fund? Well, it gives you really good diversification because it doesn't necessarily follow the moves of the stock market. It doesn't. Stocks can go one way and a futures contract can go another. So that gives you great diversification. Mind you, it can go in the same direction. That's the beauty of it. It goes in its own direction, depending on how good the manager is and what kind of futures he's buying and selling. So it's just an idea, a futures contract. If you're getting a little bit more sophisticated and you want to look at something a little bit more exotic, a futures fund might be for you. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's pick up another text question from Bruce in Texas. Fantastic show. Really has controlled my panic urges and made me more a patient investor. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. That's really what we want to do. Don't let emotions control your decision making. Don't let the market and what it's doing today drive what you're going to do. Okay, that's not how it works. And if that can control your urges to do that, that's great. You want mentioned four indicators to begin comparing stocks. I have return on equity, gross profit or margin, gross profit margin, and then net profit margin. What was your fourth one again? I don't remember listing just four. Justin might have done that. And, of course, return on equity and gross profit, net profit, they're pretty important. But there's so many indicators. We like a return on equity in the teens, usually around 17% or higher. Okay, and we like profit margins to be expanding instead of contracting. When you're talking about margin, net profit, gross profit, we want to see them expanding, not contracting. And then, you know, you got your, of course, everybody knows P/E ratios, but how about price to sales? How about inventory turnover? All those are very, very important numbers. So I'm not sure, you might want to call and ask Justin about that, or send Justin an email. Maybe he had four that he specifically wanted to talk about on the show. I don't think there are any four or seven or two that really matter. I think they all matter. And, of course, there are those who are less important, But it always goes to the individual stock. What kind of stock are you looking at? Are you looking for a dividend payer, a grower, a high growth stock? What are you looking for? What are you analyzing? And then the different indicators are more important for that kind of company. I wish that it was easy. It's not easy, everybody. If it was easy, everybody would do it. Because everything is different. And, you know, we're in a very unusual environment now with interest rates negative in many countries and very low in our country and other countries. Just for instance, Great Britain lowered interest rates this week. Do you realize that's the lowest it's been in 300 years? 300 years. Pretty low. We're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. And that's how you can get through. Do it right now. 888-992-4278.
In the course of managing your money, your retirement portfolio, you can count on one thing year after year. That's change. Market shifts, fund managers develop new strategies, businesses evolve, and of course, your life is always changing. Steve conducts portfolio reviews by Skype or telephone to anywhere in the United States. Steve works with clients all over the country. To take advantage of this free review, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. The staff will take care of the rest. And thanks again for subscribing to InvestTalk. We continue now with this Wednesday, August 10th, InvestTalk. Well-intentioned folks blindly investing in mutual funds or even annuities and then bragging about their shrewdness. How much research do you have to do to know what you're doing? That's next time, but Steve's ready to answer any money question right now. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him from anywhere in the U.S.
Hi, Steve. This is Oscar calling in regards to ITC Holdings Corp. That ticker symbol, ITC. Wondering what you think about it, and would you be buying? Thank you very much. Actually, I'm thinking about buying. Thanks.
Okay, ITC. ITC has done pretty well, but I noticed that on February 9th of this year, they were to be acquired by Fortis, Inc. for $22.57 a share in cash and 0.752 shares of its shares per company share, or about $11.3 billion total. So, you know, it's only trading about $7 billion. So I'm wondering what's happening with that. I don't have time to look it up. As a standalone company, it looks pretty decent. It's going to make $2.12 this year. That's 2% increase, and then $2.20 next year. And it's engaged in transmission of electricity from generating stations in a number of states, okay? But it's going to be bought, so you got to find out what that is all about. Find out, is that deal going to go through? Where in the process is it? The stock, after that was announced, and that was back in February, the stock had some big, pretty volatile, a lot of shares traded in hand, and that was around $40 a share. Now it's at 46, so it's slowly creeping up. Right now it's kind of highly valued. So what you're going to do is find out, it's being bought. Where are they in that process? When is that going to take place? Has that fallen apart? Because I don't see any news saying it hasn't, but I haven't had time to read it either. So that's the key to this company. Find out all you can about the purchase by Fortis, F-O-R-T-I-S, Inc., and what's going on with that. You know, because it's not going to be, if they're going to buy it, it's not going to be ITC anymore. It's going to disappear. It's a $7 billion company. 888-99-CHART. Okay, Dow 20,000. Now, what someone did, and I just read this, so it's not me. What they did is they took the Dow 30 stocks and did a bottom-up analysis of the companies and got the consensus earnings growth for next year. Remember, I've been telling you today that every company that you ever call me about seems to always have better earnings next year. So they took those numbers and applied those numbers on a ground-up basis to determine what the price of the Dow would be based on next year's earnings and current prices. And they determined that, you know, the Dow's at 18,500 or so today, that the Dow would be 20,000 in 12 months. That's a 7.9% increase. Now, question is, can you believe next year's earnings? They did this, by the way, in July of 2015, said that the Dow back then, in 1 year from then, was going to be 20,000 again. It got up to about 18,000 and a few hundred, 18-something. So they were wrong back then. So don't necessarily believe everything you say. They also think the S&P, using the same method, looking at their earnings estimates for next year and applying the current earnings PE ratio and determine what the index would be. They said the S&P 500 was going to be 2,380, and that's about a 9% increase in 12 months. Now, you have to determine, is that reasonable? And that's not unreasonable, in my personal opinion. That's not unreasonable. But, you know, I have been around for too long to believe what the estimates are going to see. I can't tell you. I think we may have finally seen the end or getting very close to our earnings slump, our earnings recession. Remember, we've had 3 quarters in a row of earnings falling for the S&P 500. In this most earnings season, they still fell. So are we done? Are we getting close to the bottom? What's disturbing is during that whole time, stock prices didn't slump. They didn't go up much, but they didn't slump. They had one correction in January, but that was because the Fed raising rates in December, not because of what's going on in the stock market and the earnings projections and those things. So, and what that's telling everybody, and it should tell you, that P/E ratios are higher than they should be right now. I'll be in Northern California later this month. I'm always in Northern California at least once a month. And so I have a couple of dates for retirement reviews if you want to meet with me. August 30th in San Ramon, and then the very next day, August 31st in San Jose. And maybe you want to talk about, maybe you think your IRA is just totally messed up. You don't know where you're going, or you're just not happy with what's happening in your IRA, or the current money managers you have. Well, maybe you should take a look at what we might be able to help. Don't feel embarrassed, you know, of what you've done or what's in your portfolio. Don't do that. That's the least of your worries. Because market changes, family situations change, everything changes. Your job changes. So you need to do one of these checkups. I know sometimes life can get in the way, but you still need to take some time out. So hopefully you can pick one of these days, August 30th or 31st. Remember, San Ramon 30th, San Jose on 31st. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and portfolio review. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
When you approach retirement, there are some complex decisions to make about your home. Sell it and downsize, fix it up. You have another source now of answers for your real estate questions. Get a note to our onboard licensed realtor. Just click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com and he'll get right back to you.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Fine. Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed your talk yesterday about deficit spending and the government and what the scenarios
debt.
Are.
Yeah, trillions of dollars.
Especially the term a tipping point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a follow-up question about that.
Sure.
So for every dollar that the federal government spends that it doesn't have, does the Treasury actually have to borrow it, or can it just make up money from nothing, essentially?
Well, they do essentially make money from nothing because they just print it. But what they do, how they do it, is they issue bonds, treasury bonds.
Right.
Okay?
Right. That was my question. do they actually have to issue and sell a bond or a note or a bill, a treasury bill or note or
yes.
something?
Now, yes. But there is another way. Have you ever heard of helicopter money? You ever heard that term?
I've heard the term,
yeah. Yeah, but it was, I think, Ben Bernanke. They can just print the money and drop it from helicopters. For instance, they can just put money in your account.
They and have they done that yet?
No, they've never done that. But that is money that's another way that they can just print money. It doesn't have to issue bonds, but that's how they've done it traditionally for years and years and years, decades, okay?
But so far,
go ahead.
So far that's what they've done. They've actually had to issue some type of
yes.
bond or note or bill and yeah. borrow the money from someone else who gives them the principal.
Correct. That is exactly right.
Can I ask you a follow-up question
sure,
about this?
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, we always hear that eventually when interest rates rise and all the interest rates across the maturity spectrum rise, that the price, that the cost to service the federal debt will increase because
yes.
interest rates will increase.
Correct.
Is that true only for future bonds that are offered, or is there a segment of current bonds whose interest rates will also adjust and rise?
No, the current bonds are fixed. We're talking about U.S. Treasury bonds. And
right.
there's been articles about, hey, why don't you issue only 30-year bonds at this very lower interest rate? So instead of issuing 2-year and 3-year and 5-year and 10-year bonds, stick with the 10 years and just keep and then refinance the short-term debt with long-term debt.
Or issue 50-year bonds.
Yeah, or 50-year if the interest rates are, you know, so low. And, you know, and there's a lot of truth to that. And in many ways, that's what they are doing at this point. But we keep borrowing more money. This is the problem, Gene. If our government stopped spending more than they make, then this would work. But they're not stopping. They're spending more
right.
and more and more.
So even the TIPS, the Treasury Inflation Protected Securities,
yes.
So if inflation increases, do they need to pay out more than
no.
they normally would?
They have two parts of a TIP, Treasury Inflation Protected Bond, for everybody, just for everybody else. Two parts. One is a rate that stays the same for whatever length of years you bought the bond. Let's say it's a 5-year TIP. And the other is attached to inflation. So two parts. That basic
right.
rate stays the same. The inflation rate fluctuates what the ultimate rate paid to you will be. Okay, so interest rate movement won't affect that, just inflation movement will.
Okay. Okay.
Okay,
hey, thanks a lot.
Gene, appreciate the call. Good questions. Good questions. And that's when we mentioned the tipping point. I mentioned the tipping point yesterday. We don't know how much we can borrow without tipping point. We are borrowing about 90% of our GDP. That's how they measured everybody. Our $13 trillion annual budget, you know, our GDP, our annual GDP, how much money the country makes, about $13 trillion, I think, is where we are. And how much of that is borrowed money, and we're about 90%. Japan's at 2.5% or 250% of their GDP. Okay, what's the tipping point? In Greece, it was about 2.5 times, right about where Japan is. But Greece was a much weaker country than Japan is. Maybe ours is 3 times, 5 times. I don't know. No one knows. We don't know what the cause of the tipping point will be. And when we say tipping point, that's the point where no one wants to borrow your money. They don't want to pay. They will not accept low rates on your 10-year treasury. They want 2, 3, 4, 5 times that. That's what we mean. And if that happens, of course, it throws you into a deep recession. Look at Greece. I mean, you don't have to go far to find out where, you know, what's happened. You can look at, remember the Russian ruble crisis years ago? Remember the Asian currency crisis? All those things were caused by debt. No one knows where the tipping point is. It may be very much bigger for us because we are a big country, solid, been around a long time. I just can't tell you. I just tell you that it's very abnormal. By the way, being 100% GDP, the debt ratio is not unusual. Like in World War II, that happened. It can happen. But name me one good reason why it's happening today. You can't. Tops on our list of priorities is your call, as you know. Bring your questions to me anytime, 888-99-CHART. Steve called from Oceanside in Southern California.
I have two questions. One is the difference between an ETF and a closed-end fund. Are they different or are they basically synonymous? And the other question has to do with, could you clarify what is a covered call? Thank you. Bye.
Okay, ETF and a closed-end fund. So you have ETFs, they can be opened-end or closed-end. So a closed-end fund and an ETF could be either or opened-end fund. So your really question is, what's the difference between a closed-end fund and an opened-end fund? And a closed-end fund is a finite number of shares. It can be an ETF or an ETN. Okay, doesn't really matter what they call it. A closed-end fund is always a finite number of shares issued. No, there's a million shares outstanding. That's it. No more. Where an open-end fund, as long as there are people who want to buy it, they keep issuing more and more shares. What is the result of that? Well, an open-end fund, it always trades at the net asset value of the assets that ETF or ETN is holding. Where a closed-end fund, since there's a limited amount of stocks and no more shares are being issued, it could sell at a discount or a premium to the assets held inside that ETF or ETN. Depends on what the demand is. Supply and demand. Think of supply and demand. Okay, so that's how that works. What was the other question? The other part of the question he had on there? Oh, well. Call up with the other part of the question. I'll answer that too. Oh, covered calls. What's the definition of a covered call? That's right. A covered call is when you have ownership of the actual stock in your portfolio. You own the stock, and you offer an option on that stock. Okay, when you can sell calls, naked calls. You don't have to own it. Covered calls when you own it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? I really would like to know what's on your mind. What do you want to talk about? I have two things I want to talk about. Remember that I didn't get to what's a billionaire look like? I would love to get to that. And two top places in the world to retire to. Two top places. And this is based on surveys of expatriates from here in the United States, where they think the two best places to go. Anyways, also we have an email question coming up. I don't think we'll be able to get to that. We'll get to that right after the break, okay? 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. You can still get through with your questions. We still have time. We have the last segment coming up. You can also call. You can send me a note. You can send me an email. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I always answer my emails. I do my best. If I don't answer your email, that means it was missing, got trapped, or it went to the wrong address. Something. So give me a call. Send me an email. Okay, the two top places to retire in the world. Not in the United States, in the world. And these were voted by expatriates that live outside the United States. And the first one is Algarve, Portugal. Algarve, Portugal. Why? Well, it's right along the ocean. You can live there comfortably for $1,400 a month. $1,400 a month. Low price properties and on the ocean. And because it's really close to the coast and close to England, most people speak English there. So you can communicate. It also has very good healthcare services and great weather. Similar to Southern California, by the way, the weather. Similar. And the other place is Valletta, Malta. I don't know if the weather is as good. But the costs and all the other items I talked about, they're pretty much the same. You know, cost of living, what access to health care, and, you know, a lot of English speaking. Of course, many people in Europe speak English, but, you know, these two places have more. So those were voted as the top places. I kind of like that $1,400 a month, comfortably a month. I mean, you can live at $1,400. It's Algrave, Portugal, everybody. Algrave, A-L-G-R-A-V-E, Portugal. And then Valletta, V-A-L-L-E-T-T-A, Malta. Just so I thought that was pretty interesting, so that's why I brought it up. Let's go to Manu in Fremont. How you doing, Manu?
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. You were just talking about money printing.
Yes.
I think, in my opinion, Fed, whatever they're doing is totally wrong. If I buy a bond today for $100,000, let's say for 1% interest, if the inflation starts tomorrow, I will be losing a lot.
Yes.
The value will go down.
Yes.
The second thing is, the big, who is going to be responsible for this mess? As someone last year, in the last election, I don't want to name that guy. He said, the governor, Texas governor, he said that they are traitors because Fed is just pushing for printing money wrongly. Because they can deny the bonds tomorrow, as Mr. Trump has suggested, or well, they can readjust.
Yeah, well, we're not gonna. We're always gonna be paying our bonds. That's not gonna even be an issue, unless we're gonna be doing what Greece is doing. Well, that's not gonna happen. And I agree with you that they're just printing money, which they shouldn't be doing. That's I think just foolish. You're pushing a problem down the road. That's all you're doing. You need to, and I mentioned yesterday the ways you can fix it. There's only one way that's the least painful, and that's to grow out of it. Stop issuing new debt. Stop going in the hole, and then grow the economy, and hopefully inflate somewhat out of the economy. But you can also do it with austerity. You can default on your bonds, as you suggested, or, you know, inflation can spike and cause that debt to be worth much less.
Isn't a law, like right now the GOP is in majority, when they want to win the election, they always come, the debt issue is an issue, but why Congress is allowing the debt to be increased all the time? It has grown up in 8 years from $6 trillion to 19.
Yeah, you notice it doesn't matter who's in charge. I don't care if you're Republican or a Democrat. Debt seems to keep going. Neither party likes to control spending. They don't want to. They just like to spend it differently. So, you know, that's a political problem.
Yeah, I don't understand. But in my opinion, buying a government bond is a loss in the end because inflation or anything can happen. Dollar value can go down. You lose money.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't buy a long-term bond. I would not. Thanks for the call, man. You appreciate it. Still didn't get to what does a billionaire look like. And just so you know, most do not have a postgraduate degree. So don't think they're all that smart people. They're not the smartest people out there. 70% of them have a bachelor's degree, but they don't have postgraduate degrees. Billionaires. And most of them don't inherit it. Don't inherit it. Don't. Our time is up. A reminder, if you have a question about any money topic, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. Your note will go straight to me. I will answer my emails. I do. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPB Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPB, thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.
For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.